Hey, what's up, everybody? So we're back here for part two of this two-part series for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. And I'm joined again by my co-hosts here, Colin Weatherwax and Randy Haynes. Colin, just tell them where they can get you on Twitter if they want more beef. I know you said come at me, bro.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at cweatherwax13. I did want to give a shout-out to all the leagues that we did the first podcast that we just released this Saturday. A lot of the owners were very interactive on Twitter. A lot of them disagreed with me and Randy, but we already know they're wrong. So we anticipate, you know, the same kind of beef this week with this this recap of the last seven leagues. So just follow me on Twitter at cweatherwax13.
And definitely got a lot of good feedback from the first episode that we did. Randy, where could they reach you?
I'm on Twitter at RTH222. Again, we really appreciate all the feedback we got from the guys in the last group. We expect a lot more of that, especially since we'll be discussing our three teams today.
Yeah, for sure. And the first time we recorded, it was definitely a success. We talked about a bunch of teams, a bunch of leagues, and now we're just going to jump right into it. So if you're listening today, the leagues that we're going to cover are 1, 3, 6, 7, 8, 10, and 12. And we're all in separate leagues, so we'll dive into our own leagues this time. But let's start with league number one here. And league number one has Justin Mason in it, who I think will be kind enough to talk about today since he put this whole thing together. But something I saw in league one that I just wanted to get to you guys right off the bat, Justin Verlander going before Corey Kluber and Chris Sale. Colin, what do you think about that? And what did you see in league one?
Yeah, so I actually had that highlighted as one of the weirdest things that I saw, because he went 14th overall, like you said, before Kluber, before Sale. That kind of was a little crazy to me. And then I think the guy that drafted him, Craig Wilson, he took Ohtani in the third round. So that was just insane the way he started his draft.
Let me just backtrack a little bit and tell you who's in League One for the listeners out there. So you got Justin Mason, who obviously put this whole thing together from FWFB, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax, Fangraphs. Then you got Chris Fargus from DraftKings, Eric Mackey from FWFB, one of our guys, Heath Cummings from CBS Sports, Steve Gardner from USA Today Sports, Dalton Del Don from Yahoo, Matt Pullman from Baseball Prospectus, Matt Trussell from Rasball.com, Brandon Myers from Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports, Tom Pringle from Batflips and Nerds, Traig Wilson from Fantrax.com, Kyle Bishop from RotoBaller and PitcherList, David Fiore from FantasyCouch.com, Matt Kupferlay from NumberFire, and Kenneth Lay from Guru Elite DFS. If I pronounced your name wrong, sorry about it. Read it right here off the paper. Listen, Randy, what did you see in League One, and what are your thoughts on Verlander going before Kluber and Sale?
Yeah, actually, I missed when I was first reviewing this league. I actually missed the Verlander pick right away because I'm used to seeing, you know, those four yellow boxes on the draft grid going in the first round. And then when, you know, I was going back over things, I noticed it was Verlander. That really floored me. I don't have Verlander anywhere near the group of those top four aces. I have him as probably the last ace or two, quote unquote, that I'm okay with anchoring my staff. So that was a huge shocker there right off the bat. As far as certain teams, we'll go right at the boss man. Justin's team is loaded on offense. He got some really good values, and he was kind of, you know, putting that out there on Twitter as he was making the picks. Just he couldn't pass up the values that he got with Rendon in round four, and then especially Encarnacion in round five, which is crazy. He at least did take some flyers on guys like Luis Castillo, Zach Godley, that could maybe have another level that they could go up to try to help the staff there. And he loves Aaron Sanchez and Alex Wood, so I wasn't surprised by those two picks at all.
Now, something I got to say about Justin's draft, I wanted to know how you guys felt about this, starting with you, Colin. He took Domingo Santana in the eighth round, and I know the value's there for that, but how much playing time do you see Domingo getting? Would you have taken him if he was there in the eighth round, considering all the moves Milwaukee made?
Yeah, I love the pick in the eighth round, actually. In my draft, I took him in the seventh round. So I wasn't fully on board whenever I made the pick. And I don't know how Jason feels about or Justin feels about it. But, you know, getting that power source in the eighth round to pair with the speed guys that he has in D. Gordon, Jose Altuve, his bathwater guy in George Springer. So, you know, with Domingo, he could provide that high average, high home runs, high RBIs, just as long as he gets that playing time, like you said.
And we've been talking to Justin a lot in the group chat that we have for the FWFP staff. And these are all guys that he's loved the whole offseason that he's been talking up. And he got most of them here. He got the Gregory Polankos, the Blake Trinans, the Willie Calhouns, the Marcus Simeons. These are his guys, and he went after them and got them at good, definitely good values. One pick I really liked from him, and I want to talk to you about this a little bit, Randy, was in the 22nd round, he took A.J. Puck. And obviously he's getting a bunch of helium behind him now because of his great spring training. What are your thoughts on Puck, and what kind of value does he have, especially in a later 22nd round like that?
Yeah, you got to love the stuff that that he had even coming into the spring training, and then you see what is happening as the spring has gone along. He's going to start getting to where he's drafted in a lot of 15-teamers at the back end. Yeah, it's just going to be a question of when Oakland calls him up. I think they're going to have to give him a chance at some point, just based on their staff isn't really – you know, doesn't really have anybody that has to keep going out there. Plus, there's a lot of injury concerns with some guys like Manaea. So it's I like Puck. I'd like to try to get him one somewhere before draft season ends.
Yeah, and I got him in the draft that we're going to talk about in a little bit in League 6. And I got him in our staff league, I believe. I got to go back and check it in a couple drafts now. So it's kind of fogging my memory. What else do you see in League 1 here, Colin?
Yeah, so like I said, I'm not a brown noser like you guys. I'm not going to just go after Justin's team and just rave him. So my favorite team in here was the team that picked 15th. It's B_DonDSFS. So he started his draft. I'm sure he was surprised as anyone to see Verlander, you know, taken right before him. So he was able to end up with Kluber and Sale at the turn there at the wheel. So right off the bat, you know, he has to, you know, he has to get that offense, you know, made up with some lesser players. But in the third round, he went with Abreu, the most consistent bat over the last 3 years. Another consistent bat right after that with Nelson Cruz, and then he got some speed guys in Lorenzo Cain, Will Myers, Yoan Moncada, Adrian Beltre, who's going to be, you know, he's drafted so late that he's just got a great value here. So I really like the way he constructed his team. A couple closers with Brad Hand and Familia, and then he got Clevinger, so you know we're already on board with his team. And then the second team that I liked a lot was Heath Cummings' team. I listened to his podcast on CBS. He went with his strategy here, which is called Heath's Nips. It's called the no intentional positional strategy. So he just basically does based off of the best player on the board. So he was in the middle of the draft at pick 7 with Mookie Betts around on the second round, Rizzo, Dozier, and then C-Mart as his ace. And then he was able to pair him with Posey, a couple closers, and Wade Davis. And then, you know, in the later rounds, he got Ryan Healy, who I'm really high on, and Jesse Winker this year. So those are the couple teams that I really liked. But going back to Craig Wilson taking Verlander 14th and then pairing him with Shohei Ohtani, it was very questionable to me, and I'm really interested to see where he's going to end up in this league.
And you said Heath Cummings, Nips. That's what you said, right? Nips, NIPS.
Yeah, Nips.
Yeah,
yep.
So I'm looking at his draft here, and I tend to disagree a little bit because in rounds 9 and 10, he took Paul DeJong and Blake Snell, and I'm seeing a bunch of guys around them that – where I, in my opinion, are the best players available and not those two guys. What are your thoughts on that? If you can see the guys around them, I don't know if you have the draft board up.
Yeah, I got the draft board up here. So I'm really high on Snell this year. I love taking him in that range. You know, he went around Jeff Samardzija, Johnny Cueto, and then, you know, guys like that. So I think the upside is there for Snell. He's got more upside than Cueto and Samardzija, in my opinion. And then with Paul DeJong, you know, he had the high average last year, which a lot of people don't buy into. But he did have the power. He does have the multi-position. I believe he's at second and shortstop this year. So if you believe in the average, if you believe that he can improve on the average, still give you that power, you know, at the top of that Cardinals lineup, I still see it as best player available for those two rounds.
Yeah, I see a couple guys around that could be debatable, but if he thinks those are the best players available, then he did stick with his Nips theory. What about you, Randy? Anything else here on League One?
Yeah, Colin, I mean, I may be a brown noser, but I did still have B. Don as the team I liked the most here, that just off to a great start, and he was able to balance off that pitching staff after getting Kluber and Sale with the first two rounds. I thought Dalton Del Don's team was interesting. I liked a lot of the things he did, and then as I was kind of going through his roster, I've noticed that power was kind of lacking. Now, this draft is still a couple rounds from finishing, so he could address that. But it looks as, yeah, so he still has one play. He only has one player that Steamer has projected for more than 25 bombs this year, and that's Todd Frazier. I don't see, unless he's just going to keep loading up in his last few rounds with a bunch of big power guys, I don't see where he's going to be able to compete power-wise. But other than that, I love the rest of what he did with his team. Our guy, Eric Mackey, here on staff, I like a lot of what he did, but there's Brad Ziegler is his only relief pitcher so far, so that could get a little that could end up setting him back down the road if he can't hit strike gold and fab or maybe make a trade, or if he's again, this league still has a couple rounds left, so he could still take some flyers. But those are some of the teams that stood out to me.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point that all he's going with here is Brad Ziegler. I guess he's going with the strategy of punting, so we'll see how that works out for him. Now let's slide over here to league number 3, and let me read off the competitors in this league. We got Chuck Anderson, one of our guys from FWFB, Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ, Justin Viber from Fangraphs, Greg Jewett from Fantasy Alarm, Donnie Miller, another one of our guys at FWFB, Frank Stamfel from Fantasy Sports Network, Stan Sun from Rasball, Paul Martin from Lenny Melnick Sports, Chris Welsh from InThisLeague.com, RotoWire.com, Lauren Michaels, of course everybody knows, from CreativeSports.com and the Fantasy Network, USA Today, Nathan Dockin from Fantrax, Real Talk Raff from RotoBaller.com and RotoBaller Radio, Michael Beller from Sports Illustrated, Craig Mish from SiriusXM, I mean that's a pretty big name that Justin got in this one, and Joel Hennard from Fantasy Insider Show with Joel Hennard. Alright, so for League 3, I found something interesting here right off the bat, and let me read it to you guys. It was Nathan Dockin and Justin Viber. If you look at their first four rounds, Nathan took Chris Sale. That's reloading on me here. Nathan took Chris Sale, and Justin took Corey Kluber, I believe, right?
No, Scherzer. Max Scherzer.
Max Scherzer, excuse me, Max Scherzer. All right, so it's up now. Nathan took Chris Sale, Justin took Max Scherzer. Nathan took third baseman Jose Ramirez, Justin took Chris Bryant. Nathan took Andrew Benintendi, Justin took Christian Yelich. Nathan took Byron Buxton, Justin took Starling Marte. Both those guys pretty much started off at the same exact four rounds, player-wise. Even not only positional-wise, but player value-wise. When you guys get a chance, tell me what you think about how these teams shaped up having the first four rounds very, very similar. We'll start with you, Randy.
Yeah, I had those as two of the better teams in this draft. I liked a lot of what they did. If I had to nitpick with one, Justin, it looks like he's only going to have Brad Hand as a possible closer with Gregerson's injury, so that could knock him a little bit. There's a good balance of speed and power throughout both of these teams. I guess Justin's staff does have a little bit more downside with injuries, injury risk guys like Salazar and Richards and his staff, but he should have some guys like Chad Green and Betances to kind of offset that a little bit. A team that I thought that was kind of interesting with what they did was the Flex Capacitor. I'm not positive who that is. I'll let you give them the proper credit. I liked how they started their draft with Mookie, Donaldson, and then Greinke. But then one thing that I didn't really understand was the pick of Tommy Pham in round 4, when the players that went immediately after him are Nelson Cruz, Anthony Rendon, Oakland's Chris Davis, and Justin Upton are all four players that I would much rather have than Tommy Pham. And you could argue maybe there's a speed component there to Pham, but he had already taken Mookie Betts, so I didn't really see where he had to add to speed right then and there. So that was just an interesting pick considering what else was available at the time. And then if you go even a little further down, like I'd rather have Will Myers than Tommy Pham this year.
That's an interesting point. And as I'm looking at it here, Donnie Miller got off with a great start because he got Kluber, Votto, Hoskins. I don't see too many people around the TGFBI having Joey Votto and Rhys Hoskins, so that could definitely pay off a ton for him. Colin, what are your thoughts over here on League 3?
Yeah, so the two teams that kind of stuck out to me were Paul Martin's team. He picked in the middle right around pick number 8. He started off with Kershaw, Judge, and then he went Kenley Jansen in the third round, but he was able to add two more power bats right after that with Cruz and Encarnacion. So right off the bat, you get Judge, Cruz, Encarnacion. Those are, you know, great guys for your power department. Stacked the LA pitching staff with Kershaw and Jansen. So I really like that start. In this league, for that team, he went with Acuña in the 7th round. With the balance that he had, adding in Posey after those three power guys, I don't mind it as much. There's a lot of teams that we've talked about, especially in the first podcast, where they've been pairing Acuña with Ohtani and Acuña with a very risky lineup. But You know, with Paul Martin's team, I think he would slide right in as long as he gets that playing time right off the bat. So that was one of the ones that stuck out to me.
And we'll get into the Acuña and Ohtani pairing in my league because it happened in League 6. But one common theme I'm seeing over all these leagues is, and these drafts were done before it came out that Acuña would come up in mid-April or whatever they're saying, April 15th. I can't remember the exact date off the top of my head. But he's been going at insane numbers in these drafts throughout the whole TGFBI. And this was before you knew when he was going to come up or the assumed date of him coming up. So it might pay off for a lot of these guys. But what were your thoughts on seeing Acuña go early in so many of these drafts, Colin?
Yeah, so I'm a huge Acuña fan. I have him in any dynasty league that I have. I'm either actively trying to get him or I have him on my roster already. But I have yet to draft him in a redraft league. I try to keep it safe, you know, in my first 5, 7, 8 rounds. And he's just flying off the board way too early for me. I know, you know, there's a report out that said he could come up April 15th, but you know, we can't really get behind those, especially not this early in spring training. I'll believe it when I see it, whenever he comes up. But like I was saying about Paul Martin's team, whenever you have the balance, whenever you have the power guys, you know, the rocks that you have in your lineup with Judge, Cruz, Encarnacion, and Posey, Acuña, just throw him in there. If he works out, you know, it could be a gold ticket for Paul Martin to win this league.
And like I always say, you're not just competing against the other guys in the other members of your league. You're competing against 194 other guys. So it's good to take risks like Paul did here and grab Acuña at that value when he could put up numbers that are a top 5, 6 round guy. Randy, what are your thoughts here? What do you have left here on League 3, if anything?
The only thing I wanted to touch on that Colin brought up with our, you know, colleague Donnie. The pick with Hoskins there in the third round, actually, I like Donnie's team, but I didn't like that pick taking him that high. And then I hate whenever I see Hoskins go so far ahead of Abreu and Encarnacion so far this draft season. Just as a personal preference, I'm taking those two guys over Hoskins all day. Didn't want to go full, too full all in on that small sample size that we saw last year. So that's something I wanted to touch on with that you brought up, Colin. But other than that, I do like what Donnie was able to put together. So all in all, this was a pretty solid draft.
Yeah, so with Donnie, you know, I'm in a lot of drafts with Donnie. We actually, you know, he got me into FWFB, so I'm really thankful for that. But with Donnie's team, I agree with you with him taking Abreu, you know, before, or with him taking Hoskins before Abreu, it's a little questionable. But Encarnacion, like you said, he went a round and a half after that, and that's just insane to me. I understand pairing Hoskins with Votto because it's safety with risk, so it might even out throughout the season. But one of the things that I highlighted from his team was taking Luke Weaver 105th, and that went before McCullers, who I'm not a big fan of, but you know, a lot of people in the industry are. It went before McCullers, David Price, Kyle Hendricks, and Alex Wood. So Randy, I wanted to see where you felt or how you felt about Luke Weaver going that high.
It's a little high for my liking, but it's not anything that's egregious. You know, Weaver was somebody that was getting bumped up pretty high, you know, early into draft season, and he's kind of started to come back down a little bit. I don't have the data in front of me, but I would imagine this is one of the higher picks that Weaver had in the Invitational. But if you look at some of the starters that were going around, that I don't have too big of a problem with it. I wouldn't have personally done it, but it's not anything egregious.
Just out of curiosity to hear your guys' take on this, I see a lot of comparisons between draft value between Weaver and Luis Castillo. If both of them are on the board, who do you take, Randy?
It's Castillo for me. Not by a lot, but I would take Castillo. There's a swing strike component with Weaver that has me just a little bit worried that his Ks won't be quite as high as what we saw with that month and a half stretch that he put together at the end of 17.
And what about you, Colin?
Yeah, it's Castillo hands down for me. You know, I'm perfectly fine with pairing Castillo with a rock like Verlander. I know you could get Weaver later, but I just think the K upside, the innings upside is just there for Castillo. I'm ready for him to break out this year.
Yeah, I mean, both these guys are really should have good seasons. Castillo might be a little better. I would go Castillo also, but there is a lot of hype behind Luke Weaver, so we'll see what he could do this year. Now let's transition over to my league, which is League 6. I'm going to give you guys the rundown. I'm going to give you guys my draft strategy as it went along, and then I'll turn it over to you guys. You could ask me questions about my draft strategy, about my picks, and then we'll expand to the rest of the league. So you got me, Mike the Rotocop, FWFB, Fantasy Assembly, Sam Grant from Baseball HQ, Vlad Sedler from RotoWire, Guru Elite, Paul Sporer from Fangraphs, Brian Entrekin from Around the Bases and SportDegens.com. You have Andrew Gold from Bleacher Report and Fantasy Pros, Tim McCullough from Fantasy Sports Network, Ralph Lifshitz from Razzball.com and Fantrax.com, Josh Coleman from Fantasy Assembly, Mike Sheets from Fantrax and ESPN, Jason Whittle from Prospects1500.com, Steve Rappin from Fighting Chance Fantasy, George Bissell from Baseball Prospectus, Kenyatta Storin from Number Fire and Fantasy Pros, and Brock Miller from Guru Elite DFS. Now, before this league started and the names came out for every league, there were some people calling it the Group of Death. If they were calling it the Group of Death, it had nothing to do with me being in it. Half these people don't even know who I am. It's more for the Paul Spores and the George Bissells in this league. So I was sitting there with the number one pick, and obviously I'm going Trout. I'm going Trout over Altuve 10 out of 10 times, even as great as Jose Altuve is. So now it comes back to me in the second round. And I'm sitting here, and like we've discussed in the last podcast, and I've discussed it on my own podcast, I'm not a huge fan of the number one pick, especially after doing this draft, because I feel like you're falling behind offensively. If you look, you see Roto took Carlos Correa and J.D. Martinez in the first two rounds. Roto experts took Manny Machado and Anthony Rizzo. Guys are taking Paul Goldschmidt, Gary Sanchez, Giancarlo Stanton, Cody Bellinger. So I didn't feel like I could really pair Trout with anyone that would make me compete with those guys, which is why I went pitching. So I went Noah Syndergaard, I went Luis Severino, which I thought were the two best pitchers available on the board. I passed up on Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke, Jacob deGrom, Carlos Martinez. I'll still take Severino and Syndergaard over those guys. Upside is just through the roof with those two. Then it got a little questionable to some people because they took Elvis Andrews. The reason I took Elvis Andrews was because at this point, I wanted to get the best player at each position because I knew I wasn't going to build the best offense. So he was the best shortstop there. I passed on a couple other guys, and I'll read you some names here. I passed on Buxton, Hosmer, Segura, Jonathan Scope, Justin Turner. And the reason I passed on these guys was not because I thought Andrews is better than these guys, but I thought those positions were a lot deeper than shortstop. And if I didn't get Andrews here, I was going to end up with a bottom seven shortstop, which I didn't want to do. So I took Andrews. Then I took Paxton because I was going all in on pitching. The common theme behind this is I wasn't going to have the best offense. I took Buster Posey, who's one of the best guys at his position. Then I took Andrew McCutchen. Again, I went pitching back-to-back. I took Edwin Diaz and Raisel Iglesias to get those 65 saves. That would put me in the green. Then I took Adam Jones, Gregory Polanco, so on and so forth. I made a couple picks which I thought were great. I took Logan Morrison. This was very shortly after he signed. I think he would have been off the board if he was on a team already. Another one I took was later, the 20th round, Carlos Gonzalez. This was minutes after he signed. And even though he's not the greatest player in the world, he'll still hit me 15 homers in the 20th round. You're getting 15 homers. That's always a good thing. I reached a little bit on Jordan Montgomery. I was in the whole TGFBI. I took him at 211. That was the highest that he went. But other than that, I think I got some really good value picks here. I got Brad Boxberger. I got Malik Smith to go after steals. Evan Longoria, Trey Mancini, Zach Cozart. I think I really put together a pretty good all-around team here. And some of my favorite picks were the pitchers, like the Chad Greens. And like I said, I got AJ Puck, Jed Lowrie in the backgrounds here. So now you guys, if that didn't answer all your questions, send it over to me. And we'll start with you, Colin. What do you see from my team here before we get into the rest of League 6?
Well, I think I already gave you enough crap in our Facebook chat, you know, about Elvis Andrews being picked in the fourth round. I think if you were going to do the strategy that you did, you know, going full pitchers after you did Mike Trout, I might have gone after a reliever. I like how you went Paxton right after him. But with Elvis Andrews, I just think he's being so overdrafted this year. I understand his floor is very low, but last year he was being drafted in the 140 range, and that was with, you know, a power upside of 8 home runs. And then we already know his home runs are going to decrease this year, so you're already, you know, playing into that. I did like Buster Posey, Andrew McCutchen, and then you were able to get the closers, like I said, with Edwin Diaz and Raisel Iglesias. So I definitely don't have you as my favorite team. Like I said, not a brown noser, but I do like what you did with the number one pick. Like I said on the last podcast, there's a lot of people that can really F up the first pick, but I really like what you did this draft.
And to counter your Andrews point, everybody knows that the power is not going to be there. If it is, it's a great pick. But everyone knows the power is not going to be there. His home run to fly ball ratio was something it's never been before. But I wasn't drafting Elvis Andrews for the 20 home runs. I was drafting him for the 155 games that he's done over the last 10 years. I was drafting him for the 20-plus stolen bases that he's had over the last 10 years. I was drafting him for the high 280, 285, 290 average that he's done for a long time now. So I was basically drafting consistency at the position, which I didn't think I was going to be able to get anywhere else at shortstop by that time in the draft. So that's the reason I took Andrews. Randy, what else did you see from my team?
Yeah, I mean, outside of the Andrews pick, I like a lot of the I like a lot of what you did here. You know, not to brown nose, but I guess I'll be the brown noser of the group here. I did like the Montgomery pick. I'm a big Montgomery fan this year. You did a nice job of trying to balance things out. You are in the running for maybe one of the best staffs in the Invitational. So I will give you that. But again, outside of the Andrews pick, there's really not a lot to say. You cover pretty much everything. I like your team. You're gonna be tough to beat.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So now we'll go into the whole league. We'll open it up to all League 6. And then, like I said earlier, there's a lot of guys in this league. George Bissell, Paul Spohr, Jason Woodall, Andrew Gold. A lot of guys from a lot of big sites and a lot of big places. So it definitely should be fun. One thing I wanted to touch on and get your opinion here, Colin, because we just talked about Acuna in the last thing. Ralph's Revenge took Acuna and Ohtani in rounds 5 and 6. Back-to-back. What are your thoughts on that? I know you said if you pair it with a good team, a solid team behind it, you like it, but do you think he did that here?
I don't. You know, I like doing one of the two. I can't do Ohtani and Acuna because that just sets me so far back, especially going in the fifth and sixth round. He did start off his team with Sale, Lindor, Ozuna, and Marte, which is a pretty good base, but it's nothing like the last team that we talked about. You know, Marte could have a fallback season not being on PEDs. Ozuna had a breakout season last year, and, you know, some people believe it. Some people, you know, think it might have been a little bit of a fluke, and there's some regression there. But whenever you pair Ohtani and Acuna, I just feel like you're setting yourself so far behind the eight ball that I just can't see myself doing that this year.
Yeah, it's an interesting look on it. Tell me what you see from League 6 here. Excuse me, Randy.
One thing I noticed was that Paul Spohr set the high pick for Ozzie Albies, and at the time I was questioning it a little bit, and then I, you know, listened to his podcast. I guess it would have been the episode that was towards the end of last week, and his rationale for drafting Albies there was actually something I hadn't really considered, is that unless Albies just goes, you know, full Dansby Swanson and is just unownable for like 3 months at a time and the Braves finally have to send him down, you know, Albies is going to have actually a pretty decent floor, you know, with the speed. He should hit high enough in the order as long as he stays somewhat consistent, you know, score a decent amount of runs. That Braves lineup's a little underrated. It's not going to, you know, light the world on fire, but it's a decent lineup. So I did actually, you know, change my opinion on that after I heard Paul's rationale for it. I noticed that Josh Coleman, with his pitching staff, I wasn't a huge fan of what he did with an anchor being Jose Quintana. I know the strikeouts ticked up when he went to the Cubs, but if that doesn't continue, that could be an issue with him being your staff anchor. And then some of the some of the shots that he took later in the draft on Salazar, we're still all kind of up in the air about what's going to happen with Marcus Stroman. But to me, his starting pitching was probably the weakest of any team in this league. And the last thing that I had was, Jason Woodall. Sorry if I mispronounced that. It doesn't appear like that he has any saves unless Dominic Leone is going to take that Cardinals job. And that's not the end of the world. I know I keep bringing that up on a lot of these teams, but it's going to be hard to compete in the overall if you're not going to have any saves at all. You know, you can make some trades, maybe you can luck into something on Fab, but it's going to be pretty hard to compete in the overall if you're at the bottom two or three of your own league in saves.
Yeah, and something that I thought was also interesting was the whole second base, the way the second baseman went in this draft was very interesting because Daniel Murphy and Robinson Cano were on the board, and to put it in perspective, Chris Taylor and Ozzie Albies weren't. So now I'm in the sixth round coming back to me, and I thought I was going to have a chance at Murphy or Cano, and they got picked two out of the four picks right before me, and I would have went with those guys instead of Posey. I'm kind of happy the way it turned out because now I got Posey, who's one of the top catchers. But it was just interesting to me to see Chris Taylor and Ozzie Albies go before Murphy and Cano. So I thought that was something to take note of. Colin, you got anything else here on League 6?
Yeah, actually, this league is the one that I put the most notes on. And unfortunately, it's not about your team, Mike. But I wanted to piggyback on what Randy said about Josh Coleman's pitching staff, because that's one of the things that I highlighted along with Albie's pick. But, you know, going into the season with a staff of Quintana, Hendricks, Stroman, Salazar, you know, Julio Teheran, that's very risky. And I know how you said, Randy, that he might have the worst one in this league. I think he might have the worst one in the Invitational. So having those risky guys, you know, with Stroman, Salazar's injuries, Hendricks, you know, is on in the decline for sure. So that was one of the things that stuck out to me. As far as player picks, Carlos Martinez kind of stuck out to me because he went in the third round to Waddell, like you said, but he also went ahead of Jacob deGrom, Carlos Carrasco, Robbie Ray, Dallas Keuchel, you know, those guys who I have a lot higher than Carlos Martinez. What did you think about that pick, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't my favorite pick, you know, of the Invitational, you know, going ahead of some of the guys like that. So it's, yeah. I guess it all comes down to, you know, personal preference, I guess, with stuff like that.
Yeah, so that was one of the player picks that kind of stuck out to me. I wanted to get, you know, one of you guys' thoughts on these two teams. They were picking towards the end, 12th and 13th, and these are the first three guys that they started off their drafts with. I wanted to see which one that you would prefer if you were in their position. So Fighting Chance Steve took Kershaw, Jose Ramirez, and Robbie Ray. And then the guy right after him, George Bissell, took Kluber, Votto, and Rendon. I kind of like – I'm leaning towards Bissell, but, you know, whenever you have Kershaw, it's always a cut above. And he even added on to his team with Nelson Cruz. So I wanted to see what y'all thought about those two.
You want to go, Randy? Go, Randy.
Yeah, I can go. We talked about this on past episodes. I'm not ready to just go all in on Robbie Ray as a top 10 starter this year. You know, if the humidor really does boost him up even more, you know, I'll be wrong on him, but I got to see it first. So I'm going to go with George. I really like what George did, the Kluber-Votto combo. Those are two of my favorite players in the whole league there. And then, you know, you could back it up with a Rendon. He got the speed with Hamilton. He was able to get some closers. I like the Jameson Taillon pick. I'm big on Taillon there. So I really like George's team. He has one of the better ones out of this league, in my opinion.
And I kind of agree here to an extent. I think George's top three guys are better than Fighting Chance Steve's three guys. But when you add Nelson Cruz into the mix, then I lean back over to Fighting Chance Steve. And I go back and forth pretty much with the two of them between the whole draft. It's two pretty good teams you got here. They took a lot of risks, but they also made a lot of smart decisions as far as picks like Andrew Miller and Jorge Polanco and Brad Peacock. I really think George Bissell did a really good job towards the middle rounds and the bottom rounds of the draft here.
Yeah, so I kind of agree. That's why I kind of highlighted those two, because they both stuck out to me. I feel like, you know, you were in the draft room, Mike. I'm sure they went back and forth, you know, in the banter in the chat room. So I really liked how they played out, their teams played out. One more guy that I wanted to kind of, you know, throw out there, Roto Gut, and he did one of my favorite things to do this year, and especially in a 15-team league, it's a little bit difficult, but he didn't get an ace in the first three picks. So he went Carlos Correa, J.D. Martinez, and then Christian Yelich, which I really like, but he got Aaron Nola and then Gerrit Cole the next two rounds. And like I said on the previous podcast, if you pair Nola with Cole, I think you're getting a number one starter out of both of those guys. So I really like what he did. That was one of my favorite teams in this league.
Yeah, and he also paired it later with you said Roto-Gut, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he also paired it later with upside guys like Luke Weaver and Taijuan Walker and Aaron Sanchez. One of these guys could end up being way above their value as far as their pick goes. So that's League 6. And Colin, you might have definitely made an enemy there in League 6. So we'll see what happens on Twitter. let's slide over to League 7. Now, let me give you the rundown. Matt Thompson, one of our guys at FWFB. Tom Baker, another one of our guys at FWFB. Michael Rathburn from RotoWire. Mike Podhorzer from Fangraphs and ProjectingX.com, Justin Vreeland, Fantasy Alarm, Jake Seeley, Fantasy Sports Network, Greg Smith, 2QBs, The Fake Baseball, Donkey Teeth, Ryan Fay from Lenny Melnick Sports, Eddie Almaguer from Fake Teams, Joseph Pitleski from Baseball HQ, I'm sorry if I pronounced it wrong, Jason Consoli from Dear Mr. Fantasy Podcast, Patrick Wisniewski Fighting Chance Fantasy, another hard name to pronounce there. Keaton DeRocher from The Dynasty Guru. Tim McLeod and Ian Kahn are sharing a team here from Patton & Co. and Prospect 361. And Patrick Donovan from Fantasy World Order and Fantrax Radio. All right, so League 7 here, and there's a couple of weird things to happen in this league. I'm sure you guys are going to touch on it, so I'm not even going to bring it up. We'll start with you, Colin, here on League 7.
Yeah, so I'm glad you started with me because I know Randy was going to go after this one, the first one. Matt Thompson with our group, FWFB. So he started his draft with Trey Turner at fourth overall, and then he followed up with Donaldson, Severino, and Craig Kimbrell. So I'm thinking, you know, that's a great start. And then the next two picks is what kind of, you know, it just really surprised me. In the fifth round, he went with Billy Hamilton to pair with Trey Turner. And then in the sixth round, he went with Ozzie Albies. So right there, he's going to have over 500 steals in his first five picks. But he didn't need to do that to get, you know, in the first place of that league, second place of that league in steals. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Randy, and that strategy, because I know you're a D. Gordon guy.
Well, Matt also drafted Jared Dyson towards the end of his draft as well. So he's just adding, even if Dyson can end up with regular playing time, that's another 30 something steals that he added. I thought it was kind of overkill. You know, Matt, you know, really like Matt, but that was kind of an overkill there with doing that. He did at least add in
brown nosing.
that's me. That's me trying to brown nose and get an opinion at the same time. He did at least take some chances throughout the rest of the draft with guys like a Logan Morrison and Kyle Schwarber that had that power upside to at least keep him in the running there. But he's going to win steals, and he could always, you know, he can always make a trade. That's one thing we have to keep in mind. These teams are not set. Obviously, have the fab, you know, the fab part of it, but these teams can trade. So maybe he can, you know, right before the deadline, he could probably auction off Billy Hamilton for whatever it is that he wants or whatever he needs at that time and make a really good run.
And it's funny because if we didn't know Matt Thompson, I'm sure the first thing we would have talked about was Donkey Teeth 87 from Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports taking Max Scherzer with the 2 overall pick. Probably the most questionable pick in this entire TGFBI. What could you have been thinking to take Max Scherzer at 2? I would have loved to get him on the podcast. That's what we should have done. We should have got him on here to explain himself. I'm sure he's going to get us in the Twitter and tell us why he did what he did. Colin, what do you think about Max Scherzer at 2 here? What is there to think about Max Scherzer at 2 here?
Well, I'm thinking if I'm picking number 3, I'm praying to the heavens because I get Jose Altuve at a discount. But, you know, I saw that, and, you know, I have Max Scherzer as my number 1 pitcher this year just because he's been so consistent, a little bit, you know, healthier. But I don't see any world where I would take Max Scherzer at number 2 unless there's absolutely no hitting categories. So the strange thing about him is he went with, you know, a little bit of an overpay in Max Scherzer, and then he followed that up with George Springer, which I like, but his third pick was Madison Bumgarner, who was the 8th pitcher overall, you know, 8th pitcher off the board, I mean. So, you know, you're getting him at a huge discount. So I think if he would have, you know, known that he could get Mad Bum in the 3rd round, he might have played it a little bit differently. I'm not going to speak for him. But, you know, with his offense being so far behind and he added Acuna to the mix, he's going full risk on offense and full surety on starting pitchers.
Randy, what are your thoughts on that pick? Max Scherzer going 2 overall.
I mean, what can you really say about it? That's what he wanted to do. You know, he might have taken the you know, the phrase, you know, just go get your guys a little, you know, a little far. But, you know, this is definitely a team that I could see it working out, you know, because he did do a really, really good job of balancing out the rest of his roster after that. But you would have just liked to have seen a Jose Altuve at that spot and then him still be able to build up, you know, a staff worth Madison Bumgarner. Maybe if he grabs Altuve in the 5th round, he doesn't grab Scope. He doesn't take a Scope. So there's still like some David Prices, Jose Barrios, Tanakas that still hadn't gone yet. So he could have still built a really solid staff that way. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, taking Scherzer 2 kind of sets the tone for the whole draft. Everything kind of got out of whack. And then you see a team, I think it was, it wasn't Baker, it was Shoeless Joe's from Baseball HQ, end up with a pretty insane start here where you got Chris Sale, Jose Ramirez, Jose Abreu, and Christian Yelich in the first 4 rounds. And I don't think that would have happened. That Scherzer pick really changed the dynamic of this whole entire draft. But continue with what you were saying, Randy, about the rest of League 7 here.
A team that I noticed that I love the offense, and you can't not love the offense, was Mike Podhorser's was his squad, starting off with Blackman, then going with Judge, D. Gordon, got great value in Edwin Encarnacion, Eric Hosmer, Whit Merrifield, Joey Gallo. Those are his first seven picks. He didn't grab a pitcher until round nine with John Lester, and then just kind of followed that up with some shakiest kind of relievers with Mark Melanson with his injury issues and Shane Green. Not the greatest pitcher anyway, and pitches for a bad team. And, you know, took some injury guys like Danny Salazar. I think Salazar's on every team we talk about on this podcast. Danny Salazar is going to start adding us on Twitter saying he's alone. But, Sean Manaea's got, I love Sean Manaea, but he's got some injury risks. Yeah, at the time he took Luis Gohara, there wasn't the ankle issue, but now that's cropped up. So, I mean, hopefully Pod's really good at trading because he's probably going to need to go grab an ace, but he'll have the ammo to go do it. So we'll see how it works. That's just something that's going to be really interesting. He's going to be one of the more interesting guys in the whole Invitational to follow as the season goes along.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I highlighted was just his pitching staff. The one thing that we tend to forget was last year around this time, you know, people might have drafted a team just like this, and then, you know, middle of the year or right, you know, first, second week, they pick up Judge and they pick up Severino, and the whole outline of their team just completely changes. So if he can grab this year's Severino off the fab this year, then, you know, we'll be singing a different tune, and he might find himself at the top of the overall. One of the things that I really liked about this draft, and I know, like you said, Mike, you know, everyone goes in as with a strategy. You know, they know exactly what they need to do. But as soon as you get a couple picks in, that thing can go straight out the window depending on what everyone else in the draft room does. So one of the teams that I liked a lot was the guy picking 15th at T_Baker5. And it's really weird because he drafted Ohtani in this draft. But every other pick that I see that he made, I just like, I love it more and more and more. So he started off his draft with Chris Bryant and then Manny Machado at the turn, and then came back around to him in the third round, got Zach Greinke as his ace and Rhys Hoskins to go with that incredible offense that he started. He did pick Ohtani in the fifth, which, like I said, is very questionable, but then he went right back to the well and got James Paxton as a starting pitcher. So I really liked those first few picks. He was able to get Yoan Moncada, Bradley Zimmer, Jay Bruce a little late, Michael Fulmer, Scooter Gennett. So guys like that, Derek Fisher, and then AJ Minter, who I'm really, really high on this year. So I was really surprised looking at his team and seeing Ohtani on his team, but still loving it. So that was one of the things that really stuck out to me for this draft.
Randy, you got anything else here on League 7?
Yeah, I did have one more thing. Kind of goes back to what Matt did. When you have somebody that goes extreme like that for a category, it obviously thins it out for the rest of the league. And team at the Spoken Keats, I'm not positive who that is, but they're, I think we already found Matt's trade partner for down the line, because I think if just glancing, his probably highest projected steals guy is going to be Chris Taylor, and he's got a lot of guys on his roster that are going to contribute, you know, five or less if he's lucky. So it's just one of those things when you have somebody that takes an extreme strategy like that, the ripple effects have to be felt somewhere. And again, Team Keaton looks like he took the brunt of Matt loading up on all the steals. So maybe we can get those two on the pod and have them work out a trade next week.
Yeah, for sure. So now we'll move over to League 8, which is Colin's league here. Let me read the competitors in the league. Then Colin, you can give us your draft strategy going in. You're actually a co-manager with Ben Brennis, another one of our guys over at FWFB. Then we'll ask you questions about your draft, whatever we have, and then we'll get into the rest of League 8. So like I said, League 8 is Colin and Ben Brennis are sharing a team. They're both from FWFB. Smata, who came up with the whole Excel spreadsheet that you're probably using right now, also from FWFB, has a team in this league. Brian Rudd from Baseball HQ, Jason Collette from RotoWire, Brett Sayre from Baseball Prospectus, George Kurtz from Fantasy Sports Network, Seth Klein from Rasball, Andrea Lamont from Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports, Brian Krayage from Fake Teams, Ray Leve Jr. from Fantasy Life Blog, Brett Carey from Fantrax, Thomas Oganowski from Prospects 1500, Sammy Reed from the Baseball Holics Anonymous Podcast and RotoGrinders.com, Chris Williamson from MakeProspectsGreatAgain.com, and Erich Rentz from Fantasy Tools Podcast. So, Colin, tell us, and it's a different kind of view here from your perspective, since you were a co-manager in this. You signed on to FWFB a couple days after the Invitational, so Ben was kind enough to hand out his team so you guys could share it. So what was your guys' strategy going in, and tell us how you broke it down by round here?
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, Ben was kind enough to add me on as a co-owner whenever no one else would, so I really appreciate him. But we had the second overall pick, so we're kind of right there with you, Mike, where you had the number one overall pick. We knew who we were going to get in the first round. We knew it was either going to be Altuve or Trout if we were lucky enough for him to fall to us. But, you know, we kind of played the draft board a little bit. So in this league, we started off with Altuve, and our second round pick was George Springer. The only reason we went with Springer is because the three guys that we were willing to take got picked all three right before us, and that's Jose Ramirez, Josh Donaldson, and Freddie Freeman. We felt really great about pairing Altuve with one of those three, and all three of them got sniped. And that's going to be, you know, the main subject for our draft, because everywhere you turn, we get sniped. We probably, in hindsight, instead of taking Springer in the second round, we should have went with the pitcher that we really wanted, and that was Jacob DeGrom, because he got picked right after us, right on the turn. So we had to settle with Justin Verlander, which isn't too bad of a settle, but we started our team off with three Astros. And so right off the bat, I was highly skeptical. I know Houston's a great team to you know, piggyback on, but having three guys from the same team is a little risky for me. But then, you know, we started to fill out our roster. I started to like it more and more. Me and Ben have a lot of the same, you know, strategy going in. So there hasn't been a lot of banter. You know, I want this guy, I want this guy. We didn't really disagree. We both made really good points. We both got onto the guy that we were going to make the pick on. So just to fill out our team here, after Verlander in the third round, we went with Encarnacion, who fell to us in the fourth. We got the consistency in Tommy Pham that he showed last year. And then since we got Verlander in the third round, we needed someone that had the high upside. So we took Jose Berríos, who I'm not really a huge fan of, but if he can pan out, then it'll be great for our team. The next round, the seventh round, we went in Domingo Santana, Nicholas Castellanos, Adam Eaton, who's both of our guys. You know, we love Adam Eaton. And then one of my picks, it was Michael Fulmer. He's one of my guys. I love what he did last year. I love what he did the year before. I just see, you know, great things ahead for him. And then, you know, I'll just rattle off the rest of the picks here. We went Fulmer, Garrett Richards, Orlando Arcia, Eugenio Suarez, Brad Brock, Pomeranz, Molina, Reddick, Cobb, Harvey. Harvey was his pick. I'm not going to take that pick. So he can go down with the ship on that one. But we punted saves, and I know Randy's going to get on to me about this because we're probably not going to be in the middle of the pack since we got Brad Brock as our rock and then Dylan Betances, Carl Edwards Jr., and we were able to get Brad Boxberger. So I'll let you guys take the floor and beat me up.
I won't come at you too hard, Colin, because I do like what you guys were able to put together. I didn't love the Verlander pick ahead of you guys. Kind of started a little six pick in a row starting pitching run there, but I would have taken Verlander after all of the guys that went right behind him: Strasburg, Severino, Carrasco, Greinke, and Darvish. But again, personal preference. You did a good job of grabbing an ace there. You know, we'll touch on the saves thing a little bit, but you do have some guys that are going to get some. Brock's going to get some. Boxberger should get some. Carl Edwards Jr. does seem like the first guy in line for more likely when something happens to Brandon Morrow and not if. So you still should get some saves there. I can't get on board with the Matt Harvey pick there. I'm honestly not even sure if he was drafted in our league. I'm assuming he was, but I just ignored it because it's pointless to talk about Matt Harvey. Yeah, I do like what you guys were able to put together. There is some injury risk, but if you're going to take some, you know, some injury risk pitchers like a Fulmer's dealing with his ulnar nerve thing. You've got Richards. Pomeranz is already a little banged up. Getting somebody like Verlander that even if they're not the greatest innings, you're getting 225. So that's a nice way to start there. So all in all, I do like what you guys were able to put together.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of the hitting here, Colin, and I'm also a big fan of the team name. The Wax Support is a phenomenal team name. But I'm a big fan of the hitting. I think your hitting's awesome. You got Altuve, Springer, Encarnacion, Pham, Domingo Santana, Nick Castellanos, who I'm a huge fan of, Adam Eaton, who could be great, Orlando Arcia, who I like, Suarez could be great. You got a bunch of good hitters here from top to bottom. My only issue is on the pitching side of things. And of course, I guess your draft's still going on, right?
Yeah, we're in the last round now. We're hoping the last guy that we want falls to us.
So it's funny because I'm looking at the draft board and it keeps refreshing because I guess somebody just made a pick. But the pitching, that is the problem with me, because it's after Verlander, who I also would have taken Strasburg and Severino over. I don't know about a couple of the other guys. But after Verlander, there's a ton of risk here. We've seen Jose Berrios be terrible. Michael Fulmer has the injury risk. Doesn't strike too many guys out. Garrett Richards has the injury risk. Drew Pomeranz is a huge injury risk after what happened recently. Alex Cobb's not even on a team yet. Matt Harvey pretty much sucks at this point. I don't see anything from him. Zach Davies is hurt. He's another guy who's an injury risk. So I don't know where you're going to get quality innings after Verlander if Berrios doesn't pan out. And even if Berrios does pan out, it might be an issue getting quality innings after that, because guys like Fulmer and Richards and Pomeranz and Davies are no guarantee to really produce anything.
Yeah, I kind of agree. You know, like I said, we got sniped so much in this draft, it just became a little frustrating because we couldn't get the guy that we wanted. You guys know my strategy. I'm not big on these injury risk guys, but getting a Pomeranz, getting Michael Fulmer, who I believe, because he just got the DeGrom surgery. I know he had a little hiccup here in spring training, but I think he could still provide me with that 200 innings. If Garrett Richards can finally get over that injury bug, I still see him being, you know, at this pick in the 11th round, I don't think there's too many guys that, you know, you could pick in the 11th round that could find themselves in the top 30 of starting pitching. So that's in my defense. I'll get on board with you guys on the Matt Harvey pick. We can dog on Ben Brennis in all of our chats. We can go after him on Twitter, you know, because I was not on board. Like I said, I've been reviewing these draft boards, and I think I saw him go in the last round once. So, you know, taking him was a little bit of a risk, but I kind of like the way that our team is filled out. Like I said, I wasn't on board the first couple picks. I wasn't liking it, but we did fill it out a lot better.
And I think the offense is great, like I said, but there is, like you said, a lot of ifs going on the pitching side of things. But then again, you're not going to beat 194 other people without taking risks and having those if guys, because the team that's going to end up winning this whole thing is the team that all those if guys turn out to be what they, if they could be this, that's the team that's going to win this whole entire thing. Nobody's going to win this whole entire thing by playing it safe every single pick. So I guess you got that in your favor, in my opinion, at least. Randy, let's branch out here in the rest of the league. Tell me what you see.
Yeah, I see kind of, you look at towards the end of the draft, whoever New Team 15 is, I'd like to give them credit, but their team name on here is New Team 15. It's pretty creative. And then Brett Sayer from BP, they both went kind of opposite strategies after the first round. They grabbed baseman Brian and Machado, respectively. But then New Team 15 went Syndergaard, Keuchel, Archer, three straight picks, took you on a Cespedes, and then backed that up the next round with Masahiro Tanaka. So loading up big time on elite arms. And then with Brett Sayer, didn't take a starting pitcher until the 10th round, which, you know, normally I'd probably be against, but Brett probably took my four favorite middle round starting pitchers, or at least four of my favorites, John Gray, Jameson Taillon, Taijuan Walker, and Blake Snell, four out of five picks. And as crazy as it sounds, I would bet a lot of money that two of those four end up as top 30 starting pitchers this year. So it's probably going to work out for Brett with that combination. I really liked Jason Collette's team. He did a very, you know, took Scherzer in the first round, added some quality arms later in the draft to fill out that staff. When you have an anchor like Scherzer, you can do that. And he's got a really good offense. He went Judge might lead the league in homers. They got Billy Hamilton, who's probably going to lead the league in steals, so that's a nice balance with Seager and Abreu mixed in. So he did really well. There was a lot of really, really well-drafted teams in this league.
Yeah, we might as well touch on Smata, since he did put the whole Excel sheet together. And I really liked what he did in the first couple rounds here. Kluber, Correa, Cruz, Yelich, Murphy. He got Murphy at a good price here. James Paxton. So he had me with those first six picks there. Kind of lost me a little bit when he took Acuna and Price, but then he got right back on board, got his closers and Melanson and Doolittle. He got Manuel Margot, Josh Bell, a lot of guys with upside here. He drafted Willie Calhoun, Jorge Polanco, I'm a good fan of, Cameron Maben, who will steal his bases. Again, the name that keeps reoccurring, Danny Salazar. he got Colin Moran, Scott Kingery, guys with upside very late in this draft. Jimmy Nelson's another one, Hirano's another one. Colin, you were in this draft room, so you know better than us. What stood out to you here in your league? Anything that we might not see right off the bat that's yelling at us here?
Yeah, so in the second round, whenever we took Springer, like I said, we had three guys ready and queued up that we would be perfectly fine with taking, and I was surprised that any of them would be there, and that was Jose Ramirez, Josh Donaldson, and then Freddie Freeman, who went 28th overall, which I just think isn't fair to the guy. They built a park for him, God's sake. So, you know, he's just going to rake this year. And unfortunately, I love the way that we did our draft, but I don't like our team the best in this league. There are a couple teams, like you said, Randy, I do like Jason Collette's team, but I also like Red HQ's team. So he started off his draft with Stanton at pick number 5, which was a little iffy, but he came back, and like I said, he got one of those value guys in Jose Ramirez in the second round, followed that up with Cookie Carrasco and Reese Hoskins, and then his second starting pitcher is Garrett Cole. So right off the bat, he has great lineup, two great pitchers, gets his closer the next round in Roberto Osuna, gets Zach Godley, who might be, you know, the most inflated humidor pitcher there is, but I really like, you know, those three starters, that closer, and those four guys on offense, and then he was able to round out his team with a guy like Malik Smith in the last round, a guy like Neil Walker, who just signed this week, actually today, so, you know, that was one of the teams that I really liked. Being in the draft room, there was a couple guys that timed out, which was a little frustrating, but, you know, being sniped as many times as we were, there was a lot of banter going on between myself with Brett Sayer, with Smata, like you said. You know, there was a lot of guys just going back and forth, and it's been a blast. So, yeah, we really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and there's no worse feeling than when you're working all day and you're checking this on your phone 15 times in a day and the same person is still on the draft board, is still on the clock. You're like, God, I just want to pick, and then you end up only getting one pick that day. So I feel your pain there. Let's slide over now to League 10, to Randy's league, and I'll read it out for you here. We got Randy Haynes, one of our co-hosts, obviously, from FWFB. Steve Ross, another FWFB guy. Ryan Bloomfield from Baseball HQ. Thomas Callahan from RotoWire. Ben Passenkoff from Fangraphs. Scott Engel from Fantasy Sports Network and Roto Experts. Rudy Gamble from Razzball. Phil Nasons from Creative Sports 2. Heath Capps from Fake Teams. Riley from Fantrax. Yancey Eaton from the Dear Mr. Fantasy Podcast. Nick Mariano from Roto Baller. Stevie from the Stealing Science Podcast. Chris Negus from Jays in the House. And Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. Now, we'll do the same format we've been doing as far as our leagues go. Randy, take the ball here. Tell us your strategy going in and if you kept up with your strategy throughout the draft. And then we'll ask you some questions about your draft picks here.
Yeah, I was picking out of the four hole. And if anybody heard the podcast that we released the eve of the Invitational, I said if he fell to me, I wasn't taking Trey Turner. I wanted Nolan Arenado, and that's what happened. Trey Turner went 3. I got Nolan Arenado at 4. I was very happy about that. And my strategy going in was to just kind of take the best player available for the first, you know, 6, 7, 8 rounds, and then trying to start going from there. I know to compete in an overall component like this, I put this out on Twitter, is you need to take some risks, but then you also need some guys that are, you know, what you're going to get, which is kind of what I did for the first few rounds. You know, Colin doesn't like, you know, the D. Gordon pick in the second round, but that was, you know, elite batting average, should be a really good run scored in that Seattle lineup, and he'll finish top 3 or 4 in the league in steals. So I've got that. You really only have to add 1 or 2 other steals guys to get to the top of your league in steals when you take somebody like that. I really liked Steven Strasburg picking 3. Zach Greinke went ahead of him, which I was thrilled to see that, so I could get Strasburg there. I think I ended up being getting the lowest pick on Strasburg in the whole Invitational, or one of the lowest ones. We touched on this a little bit last episode when I took Jonathan Scope in the 4th round, and you guys asked why I wanted to double up on second base there. It wasn't a plan that I had going in. Again, I wanted to take the best player available, and for me, Scope was, you know, he was the best player available. Maybe I'm being a little bit of a homer as an Orioles fan, but I see that guy play a lot, and he can just flat out hit. I know he doesn't walk a lot, but he reminds me a little bit of, actually kind of like Adam Jones, where, yeah, he doesn't walk a lot, so you think maybe one of these days the average is going to come down, the power will come down, and he'll have one of these crater seasons. And I just don't see it with guys like that have the hit tool like a Scope or like an Adam Jones still has now, but especially what he did 3 and 4 years ago in his prime. From there, I was able to grab Royce Chapman, get myself a top closer. Garrett Cole, really like Garrett Cole. He's kind of underrated in my eyes with this move to Houston. You know, the wind should be there, still a decent enough park to pitch in, And he's been pretty healthy now for the last couple of years, still getting the strikeout in innings, so I really like that. And in the seventh round is where I started to maybe look into taking some risks. And you wouldn't think somebody that the age of Miguel Cabrera is a risk, but he kind of is. Take him in the seventh round. This guy is either going to, you know, I'm going to hate that pick, you know, a month and a half in, and I'm going to be like, why did I take this guy? Or he's going to be back performing like a first or second round player. I really don't see anything kind of in between. I think he's either going to be old Miggy or he's just going to be flat out done. So that was kind of an upside pick that I took there. And I didn't have any outfielders at that point, so three straight rounds. I went with Adam Jones, like we talked about before. Rolled the dice on two guys that I really like, Gregory Polanco, Bradley Zimmer. I was able to grab another closer in Hector Neris. I don't want to keep rolling through the whole draft order there, but I was able to fill out my staff, add some power. Was still able to grab a little bit of speed. For this draft, Steve Ross of FWFB, he did a write-up for his team that you all should check out, and he kind of touched on a few other aspects of the league, so I wanted to give Steve a shout-out. He said some really nice things about me that probably aren't true, but they were nice enough for him to say. So you guys can fire away.
Colin, we'll start with you. Talk about Randy's team here.
I think I've given you enough hell on D. Gordon in the second round.
Bring it.
Well, I just don't agree with it. I mean, we've already gone over it.
Quick question then. You know, at the whatever league it was before, talking about, I think it was Heath Cummings, right? It was one of the CBS guys,
right?
About how they wanted to take the best player available, you know, kind of regardless of position. Well, that's what I did here. Now, maybe Scope wasn't the best player on the board there in your opinion, but that's what I did. I didn't care about the positions for the first probably 7, 8, 9 rounds. I did want to address outfield, you know, a little bit in the, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th round because I didn't have any. But Adam Jones, Gregory Polanco were two of the best players on the board at the time anyway, so it was easy to make those picks.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, everyone has their own strategy. I think we're great analysts to be on this podcast because you have your best players available and they're all wrong, so it's fine with me because we can just disagree all day. But no, I mean, I think you really well rounded out your team. I like pairing Strasburg with Gerrit Cole. I know in some people's eyes it would be an injury risk, but like you said, Cole, he's been great. You know, he's been relatively healthy. I like the Miggy Cabrera pick in the seventh round. That could really pan out for you. And if he produces like he has in the past, besides last season, that could be one of the steals of the draft. So, and then what we tried to do, but we were unsuccessful because, like I said, we just kept getting sniped. You took Jimmy Nelson in the 27th round, which I think is great value and also helps you out because we do have some DL slots in this league. So as soon as this draft is over, throw him in your DL slot. Actually, you've been over for probably a week because you've been glonting it right in both of our faces. So, but throwing Jimmy Nelson in your DL spot and then having that open roster spot that you can go back out, hit the waiver wire, you know, fill in some holes that you see now that you didn't see during the draft. I really like, you know, that last pick. But like I was saying, the way your team rounded out towards the middle, you're definitely not a hypocrite because you didn't put yourself behind in any categories. You put yourself right in the middle or right towards the top, so I think you're one of the best teams in this draft.
And I think you did a really good job here. The only question I have, and I kind of like the Miguel Cabrera pick, so that's not even going to be the question I have. The only question I have is the quality innings that you're going to get besides Strasburg and Cole here. And the same thing's happening again, where I guess somebody's picking, so it's refreshing. But I know you guys
shouldn't be. We've been done for 4 or 5 days. So. Yeah, quick shout out to everybody in League 10. You guys were awesome. We were one of the first leagues done. It was a blast to be in.
Yeah,
this
yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Every time I turn around, there were picks just flying off the board, man.
I wish I could say the same. I literally just took the last pick of the entire draft, so now my draft's officially over. But like I was saying about the innings that you're going to get from the guys you draft in the middle here, Danny Duffy, Michael Wacha, Sean Manaea, and Jared Eichhoff, and Mike Minor you took a flyer on, and I'm just not seeing where these quality innings are going to come from. I know we talked the other day, and you said that you think Duffy's good if he stays healthy. Talk to me a little bit about the selection between those guys, between the Duffys and Wacha and Sean Manaea. What are you expecting to get from these guys?
I'm expecting to get good innings when they're in there. I know there's some risks, especially with Duffy and Manaea. Not so much Wacha outside of the 1 year. He's been relatively healthy throughout his career. Eichhoff was somebody that I shouldn't have taken him in the 21st round. I'll admit I'm probably the min pick for him, and He's just one of those guys. Like, I just, for whatever reason, I can't quit him. I know it's Jared Eichhoff. Who cares about Jared Eichhoff? But I see a good pitcher in there somewhere. But to kind of balance it out, that's why I grabbed Chris Devensky in the 20th round. That's, which is, you know, something out of your book there, Colin. So I liked having to have him. He's going to get me, you know, 80-ish or so really good innings to offset if Duffy has a DL stint or if they have to skip Manaea or something like that. So I think it'll end up working out. I took enough shots, and then having somebody like Strasburg and Cole and Chapman to kind of anchor the staff with the Devensky to supplement when those other guys get hurt.
Yeah, and that's the point I was just about to make. Maybe you could have taken a Chad Green or even a Yosmero Petit in the back end to get those innings that are going to be quality, that are going to be a little bit more than a closer would get. Maybe you'll get 70 innings out of Yosmero Petit or 80 innings or whatever it is.
Yeah, looking back, I could have waited on Eichhoff. The Eichhoff pick should have been somebody that was a, even if it's just like a one inning at a time reliever, like, you know, Bedrosian, you know, he went a little bit after that. Brett Boxberger went after that. So I could have grabbed somebody like that. So I know I'm throwing him in there every week, but Jared Eichhoff's just my weakness for whatever reason.
Yeah. But as far as the hitting goes, we do have a lot of the same guys here. We both took Polanco. We both have Adam Jones. There were a couple other guys on your team. Evan Longoria, we both have shares in. There's a couple guys here. We both have Devinsky. So I do like the makeup of your team, and I definitely like the hitting aspect. If those guys do pan out, your 3, 4, 5 starters, then obviously you're going to end up with one of the best teams in this league. If they don't pan out, it might be a little bit of an issue that you run into as far as quality innings go. And like we did earlier, you were in the draft room, so you know better than us. Give us some of your notes here on this league.
This was a great drafts up and down the board. I'm not just saying that because I was in it. I'd be saying that if just reviewing it. You know, going in, I was hoping that somebody in this league would take one of those extreme strategies like we've talked about and that we've seen, because then I was looking to pounce on some value there, and it was just never really came. I feel like I had to pay full price for pretty much everybody that I selected. Some of the better teams in this league, I really like what Yancey was able to do. He's got huge power, plus Kershaw with his first 4 picks. That was very well done there. Nick Mariano is very solid up and down the board. Some people aren't okay with Darvish as their ace, which is what he went with. I'm good with it. He took Dozier in the 3rd round as somebody who I really like. And I got to give a special shout out to Ryan Bloomfield, who single-handedly ruined all my prospective picks every time, especially later in the draft. He took probably 4 or 5 guys in a row where I'm thinking, oh, they'll make it back to me, and they never did, and every time it was Ryan. So Ryan's got a good team, and then I give him an extra bump for making me cuss at him, you know, once a day for a whole week. So,
yeah, I had plenty of those in my draft, so I definitely hear you. Going back to what you said, Randy, about none of these teams taking, you know, an extreme approach, I have to disagree, because looking at Yancey Eaton's team, which is who you kind of brought up right off the start, is it's just power, 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 power with pitchers, with hitters. So he started off with Kershaw, and then he went Judge, Nelson Cruz, Kayrys Davis, Dallas Keuchel, and then Joey Gallo. So right there, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's going to win home runs, no doubt about it. So then, you know, towards the end of the draft, he kind of did the opposite of what most of the industry guys are doing, is getting power late. He went with average late with DJ LeMahieu, possibly David Dahl, you know, Cesar Hernandez, and then maybe like a Josh Harrison, who might be able to bump up that average a little bit. So he did go power real early, which was very, you know, very interesting, especially doing Gallo at the sixth round. I'm a Gallo guy, and I don't think I could do that. But, you know, another guy that kind of stood out to me, just his first 4 picks, I didn't even have to look after that, was Scott Pianowski. I think he just went value on all 4 picks. He got Chris Bryant at the 13th overall pick. Around on the 2nd round, he got Joey Votto. And then coming back around in the 3rd and 4th round, he got Benintendi. And then Justin Verlander in the 4th round, which is absolute steal as his ace. So I loved his first 4 picks. But my favorite team in this group was Ben Pasenkoff. I believe that's how it's called, Rotographs. So Rafael Devers is very polarizing to me this year. I love what he did last year. I believe in what he did. You know, I'm definitely going to try and go after him. He got him in the 5th round, and I thought, you know, that might have been the start of his demise. But starting off with Kluber, Jose Ramirez, Marcell Ozuna, and then Edwin Diaz, and then going Devers and Luis Castillo. I loved it. And then towards the end of the draft, you get Steven Souza, who's been the talk of the camp in D-backs camp this spring. Yonder Alonso and Jose Martinez as his first baseman to pair with Edwin Encarnacion. And then the flyer guy like Lewis Brinson and then Brad Peacock, who I love as well. So those are the guys that kind of stood out to me. And then to throw it back over to you, Mike, I wanted to ask you a question. If you could analyze Fantasy Phil's team, who picked first overall, and kind of compare, you know, your strategy with his, because he did end up with some of the same players in Trout and Elvis Andrews.
No, it's funny because that's the point I was just about to make. And I like to look at the other teams that I picked number one, because like you said on the last show, it seems to be a polarizing pick. So he started with Trout, and then he went Starling Marte, Zach Greinke, Aaron Nola, which I'm a huge fan of that 2-3-4. And then he even got Andrews at 5, Margot, who I like at 6. But then it gets a little tricky here because he goes 7 here. And, of course, my thing's reloading again. I believe he went John Lester, and I'm not sure who his other pitchers are because it won't load up here. You got his other pitchers for me, Colin?
Yeah, Dylan Bundy, Cole Hamels, Kevin Gausman. So I see what you're saying with that.
See, that's where it goes south for me, because he's not going to have as good as the picks he made on offense were, especially in the early rounds, he's not going to have the best offense because he's so far behind everybody else that are picking 4 straight hitters and they're getting these middle picks here. So I would have just even waited even longer on pitchers. If you're going to get those guys, you might as well have waited and just took deep flyers and tried to get the best possible offense you could have, because those guys I'm not a huge fan of, to be honest with you. Here, I got it pulled up here. I do like the Carlos Santana pick. Jake Lamb, I'm not a huge fan of. Vizcaino and Shane Green, I'm not a huge fan of those guys either. But he could have even waited, as crazy as it sounds, past Dylan Bundy and got a Charlie Morton, or got a, I don't want to say Gohara because now he's hurt, but got a couple other guys here that could have been just as good as a Dylan Bundy or a Cole Hamels in the later rounds. So that's where I think he might have went off the rails a little bit. But as a whole, as an offense, I really do like what he did there. Colin?
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's why I kind of threw it to you, because I wanted to get your take on that first overall pick. But that's all I got for me for this league. I think you got your work cut out to you, Randy, because there's a lot of good teams. There's a lot of heavy one-sided teams. But being the balanced team that you have, you might have a pretty good chance.
Yeah, I will say it's definitely going to be a tough league.
Yeah, so those are our three leagues, and we're sitting here for over 2 hours now combined between the shows critiquing other people's teams. So feel free to critique ours. We tell you our Twitters in the beginning and the ends of the show. So just add us on Twitter or Facebook, whatever you want to add us on, and tell us what your thoughts on our teams are, what you like, what you don't like, what you agree with, what you disagree with. So those are our three teams. We have one more league to cover here. It's league number 12, and I'll pull up the competitor list for you here. We'll touch into League 12 a little bit, and then we'll sign off here. So League 12, Evan Peterson from FWFB, Doug Dennis from Baseball HQ, Scott White from CBS Sports, Brad Johnson from Fangraphs, Chris Bouvier from Fantasy Alarm, John Heglin from Baseball Prospectus, Gary and Thorne from NBA Fantasy, Zach Steinhorn from Creative Sports and MLB.com, Zachary Perbeck from Fantasy Life Blog, Bobby Sylvester from Fantasy Pros, Andrew McClintock from FSAA, Tony Spina from Prospects 1500, Nathan Grimm from RotoWorld, Robert Leibowitz from RotoHeaven, and Russell Wasco from DFSReport.Weebly.com. So Colin, last league here, League 12, tell me what you see.
First thing right off the back, Jose Altuve going first. So why couldn't this guy be in my league? I want Mike Trout at number 2. That's the first thing that popped out to me. Shohei Ohtani going in the 4th round. It's kind of becoming a broken record with us now, just kind of going that strategy. I get it being in an overall component, but I just can't. I'm going to say waste. I can't waste that high of a draft pick on someone as big of a question mark as Ohtani. A couple of the value picks that I really like, of course, Clevinger, who we've talked about. One guy that we haven't really talked about on this podcast is Willie Calhoun. So Willie Calhून went in the 13th round to at John Hegland, BP. So he's going in the 13th round, which I think might have been his min pick, but I'm completely behind it. I'm a Rangers fan. I loved what we got back for the Darvish trade. I loved getting Calhoun as the number one, you know, get back number one prospect for him. But His profile is just going to be 20 to 30 home runs, high average, great play discipline. That lineup around him is just going to get better with Mazzara, Beltre, Gallo. So I love, you know, pairing him with the offense that he did with Justin Turner, JD Martinez, Mookie Betts. You know, he kind of did the first two things that we did, just kind of went all Red Sox the first two picks and even threw in Kimbrel. So he might be a little bit shaky, you know, kind of like we were. But, you know, those are the couple of the individual picks that I really liked. What do you like about this draft, Randy?
The one team that kind of really stands out to me was Rob, is it Leibowitz? I apologize if I said that wrong. But he started off with Kluber, Jose Ramirez, Nelson Cruz, Christian Yelich as his first four picks. That's just beautiful. And then he did a really good job of balancing things out throughout the rest of the draft. Has a nice blend of risk and some stability. And there's even a Danny Salazar appearance on this team, which is kind of par for the course with how we've been going so far. I did notice that there were two teams that appear to adopt similar strategies. One was Scott White, and the other was Bobby Silvester, going hitter heavy, you know, the very first six or seven rounds, and then three straight rounds in a row, grabbing three starting pitchers that were kind of a blend of a little bit of stability, a little bit of upside, and some age mixed in. Scott went with Sonny Gray, Johnny Cueto, Alex Wood. Bobby grabbed David Price, Lance McCullers, Rich Hill. So there's a lot of similarities between those pair of trios. It was an interesting draft because there are a few guys that went a little extreme at both ends of the other team. Let's see what teams picked. Doug Dennis. There are no real saves on Doug's team unless Drew Steckenrider or Ryan Madsen end up with the closing job. So there were some. It's definitely an interesting draft to try to sit back and dissect.
Yeah, and I really do like Chris Booth 14's team here at Chris Booth 14. Is he got the Sale and Votto combination, and then he did the Robbie Ray, Marcell Ozuna, Jonathan Scope, Quintana, Domingo Santana, Puig, Didi. Up until that Jake Lamb pick at 10, I was all on board with everything he was doing. He got some really good value with a couple of guys, and then he gets right back on track when he gets to Bradley Zimmer, Odubel Herrera, Cesar Hernandez, guys that really could have some value at these late picks. But other than that, this draft, besides the whole Altuve thing, really was pretty much chalk for me. I didn't see too many picks that I thought were too crazy or too out of the norm here. Colin, you got anything else in this league?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. You know, once we've dissected all these teams, a lot of them are starting to run together. A lot of the picks are looking good. A lot of the teams are looking good. It's really crazy to me how you guys at the first pick, I don't know what y'all are smoking, but everyone's smoking the Andrews pipe. So it looks like every single one, it's Andrews, Trout, Andrew, Trout. And then this one is Andrews Altuve. So I don't get it. It's okay. Y'all will probably finish ahead of me. I'll make a fool out of myself, but that's what I'm here for. I'm going to have to agree with you, Randy, about CBS Scott White's team, Bobby Silvester's team. I really liked how they played out. I really liked how Scott White was able to do hitter, like you said, all the way up until the eighth round and start getting Gray, Cueto, Wood. Those are three guys, especially with Cueto, who could have a huge bounce-back season. He could find himself in the middle of the pack of his pitching stats, and right being at the top of the, you know, the top of the leaderboard in the hitting stats, that might be all that he'll need. So, like we've said, you know, all these drafts, they're done by experts. We're here to dissect them. We're nothing short, or we're not even close to experts. So, like we said on the previous podcast, if you have something, you know, to say to us about how we went after your team, how we liked your picks, anything like that, come at us. I'm at CWeatherWax13. I'm here to, you know, listen to your reasoning, tell you you're wrong, and still give you a follow and still give you a like. So
yeah, Colin wants the punishment. Colin's here for the punishment.
Yeah, and Randy doesn't have a bad bone in his body. So like I said, we pair pretty well on this podcast.
Randy, you got any closing statements here?
No, I just really enjoyed doing this. This was a lot of fun. Yeah, another shout out to the boss man, Justin Mason, for putting all this together. This is going to be a blast to follow all year, not just with our own leagues, but with all the other leagues that are going on and all the different strategies in play. So this is going to be a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed doing these two previews.
Yeah, and if you're listening to these two previews, you could check out our show. Us three do the same kind of thing. And now that baseball season is kind of approaching here, it should just even get better and better because there'll be more to talk about. So us three are doing a weekly show for Friends with Fantasy Benefits that you could check out. Colin, you want to, Randy, excuse me, you want to just drop your Twitter name one time?
Yeah, I'm at RTH222 on Twitter.
All right, and I'm at Mike the Rotocop, signing off. FWFB, great fantasy baseball invitational. Hope you guys enjoyed.